Species unite.
I think the thing revolves around the control of nature. You know, I mean, you get way back to that. Some people are really uncomfortable around nature existing as it should, and they feel that we need to fix things.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. This episode is sponsored by the Summerlee Foundation. They are a mission-driven, proactive organization dedicated to the support of animal protection and the preservation of Texas history. Grizzly bears are protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act. But Republican lawmakers in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming are trying to change all that. They're pressing the Biden administration to turn the management of grizzlies back over to the states, which would mean there'd be a hunting season for grizzly bears, which would probably look something like what we're doing to wolves in those same states, which is nothing short of a massacre. This conversation is with Dr. Christopher Servine. He spent 35 years from 1981 until 2016 fighting to bring back grizzly bears. In 1981, they were on their way out. There were only 30 breeding females left in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, and most people thought there'd be no way to save them. But because of Chris and other people like him, and because of the Federal Endangered Species Act, a conservation miracle happened. They brought back the grizzly bears to a thriving population. But now, in 2023, because of politicians in the Northern Rockies, the future for grizzly bears could be very bleak. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Are you in Missoula?
I am.
I went to school there.
Oh, you did.
I loved it. I get back when I can because I love Montana. And I loved going to school there. And I was there when the wolves got, you know, returned. So it's a good time to be there. One of the reasons I want to talk to people about wolves and grizzly bears and mountain lions is because I feel like 20 years from now, all these people who aren't paying attention to this are going to wake, like, be like, what do you mean we don't have grizzly bears anymore? No one knows what's happening. It's terrifying to me that things are as bad as they are for so many of these animals.
They got better for a while, and now they're at risk of getting worse, for sure.
I watched your talk that you gave at the beginning of the year, the Gallatin Valley Earth Day talk. One thing I had no idea of is how close to the brink of extinction they were when you started all of this. Will you talk about like where things were when you started?
Well, grizzly bears, you know, were abundant throughout Western North America, and it was estimated there were perhaps 50,000 in the Western United States at the time of Lewis and Clark. And with the advent of European settlers came the persecution of grizzly bears. And so grizzly bears were heavily persecuted throughout the West, wherever they occurred, because people were afraid of them. They didn't think grizzly bears could be compatible with livestock and agriculture. And the whole idea of manifest destiny that the Europeans were to tame the West and make it a safer place for white people to be. And so what happens is grizzly bears went from about 50,000 down to really low numbers. And then by 1975, they were listed under the Endangered Species Act as a threatened species. A threatened species is one that is likely to become endangered in the foreseeable future. And at that point, grizzly bears were thought to be in six different ecosystems throughout the four states of Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, and Washington. Those were separate areas. And altogether in those areas, there were probably about 300, 350 grizzly bears left. They were separated into island populations. There were thought to be a few remnant bears. So there weren't very many left. In 1981, when I started, there was a research program that was beginning in the Yellowstone area to understand how many bears were there. And it appeared that there were only about perhaps as few as 30 females left in the Yellowstone ecosystem. And when I started, my job was to implement the recovery plan. You know, grizzly bears are one of the lowest reproductive rates of any land mammal in North America. So they're very, they don't respond very well to conservation. It takes a long time for their numbers to increase. And so with 30 females, you know, it was a risk population. It was really questionable whether we could fix that. At the time, there was a lot of resistance in the various agencies about recovering grizzly bears. I mean, sure, it was nice to have grizzly bears around, but, you know, we're not going to do anything different about them. The agency that was really most concerned was the National Park Service, because Yellowstone was kind of the core area for bears. And there were very few bears outside Yellowstone National Park at that time, 1981. And so, you know, what I thought was going to happen is that I was going to preside over the demise of the grizzly bear, and we would just document the eventual decline and disappearance of grizzly bears in the Yellowstone system, and then in many other systems as well, because there wasn't a lot of coordination and cooperation. So it was a time of great risk. And if we had not listed the grizzly bear as a threatened species and started recovery under the Endangered Species Act, there would be no grizzly bears in the Yellowstone ecosystem today. And in much of the rest of the United States, there would probably be hardly any, if any at all. So the Endangered Species Act allowed us to bring grizzly bears back from the edge of extinction in the lower 48 states.
Back in that time, what was the climate like, not just with the agencies, but just people in general? Were people pro-bear?
I think in general, people thought bears were nice. And, you know, they knew about bears from the work of the Craigheads. You know, John and Frank Craighead had worked in Yellowstone from 1959 to 1967. And they had done some of the first research on grizzly bears at that time. And some of their work was in National Geographic. It was in a Geographic special. And so people knew about bears. And, you know, they thought that was kind of neat to see bears. And it was too bad that they were going to disappear. But, you know, people were not, like, negative about bears. I think in general, people were kind of neutral about it. It wasn't something that was an abiding interest in most people, but it wasn't something that people were opposed to either.
Why were the agencies then, like, not on the same page?
Well, the agencies had established roles that they were comfortable in. You know, for example, the Forest Service at that time in the early 80s, they viewed themselves as a timber production organization, and their job was to cut trees and build roads. And, you know, when I would go and talk to them about grizzly bear conservation on the national forest, they would shake their head and say, well, we don't do wildlife. You know, we work on forests and forest activities, and grizzly bears are not part of that. So the states were at that point still mad that the grizzly bear was listed under the Endangered Species Act and came under federal management. You know, grizzly bears had been managed by the states up until 1975. And so the states were very resentful of the fact that the Endangered Species Act could step in and take away the management of animals like grizzly bears. Despite the fact that the grizzly bears were about to disappear, they didn't see any problem with that. They were just more concerned about the fact that the feds were going to take over grizzly management.
They're still kind of upset about that, right?
Yeah, they want it back. They want the management of bears back. They've always wanted it back, you know, for a long time.
So how did it happen that you go from 30 females in the Yellowstone to a thriving population now?
The key things that we did to help grizzly bears was to stop bears from dying on the landscape. So we started addressing all the issues that resulted in dead bears, like sanitation, for example. There were open pit garbage dumps in the park for many years. Those were closed in the early 70s. And outside the park, like in Cook City and West Yellowstone and Gardner, there were still open pit dumps. And there were grizzly bears in those dumps in 1981. And when grizzly bears came into dumps, they got into town, they got into conflicts with people, and they were shot. People in the backcountry, you know, when the backcountry users like outfitters and horsemen that carried a lot of gear back in. They would carry stuff in, they would build a big camp, and when they had, you know, bacon grease from the morning bacon, they would just pour it out back on the dirt behind the tent. And if a grizzly bear came in, they just shot it. You know, it wasn't like they were trying to keep bears away. They were just going to eliminate any bears that they caused to come into conflict. And so there were lots of domestic sheep on grazing allotments on public land right up to the boundaries of Yellowstone Park on the west side, on the Targhee National Forest. And those sheep were, you know, really a great risk to grizzly bears, because grizzly bears can and do kill sheep all the time. And so they put sheep in there, and the herders would kill all the grizzly bears that came anywhere near the sheep. So there were all these sources of mortality on the landscape. And the grizzly bears could never move up in numbers because they were dying faster than they were reproducing. And so we had to stop those sources of mortality. We had to secure sanitation. We had to move the sheep out. We had to build an idea in the outfitting and backcountry user community that you had to keep a clean camp rather than just let the bears come in, and solving the problem was killing the bears. And, you know, that kind of thing went on. We also improved habitat security by closing roads on Forest Service land. The Forest Service for decades had built roads to cut timber, but they never closed any. And so there were hundreds of thousands of miles of roads on the National Forest. And what that means is people can go everywhere, and any bears that just happened to be seen were often shot. We also had to build public support for bears and talk about how bears are really neat animals and what they need to survive. That we have to do some things different. We have to secure our garbage and things like that. And, you know, people began to think, we could do that. And, you know, and we also just portrayed the depth of the problem and that the bears are going to go extinct here. There's only about 30 females left. They're on the verge of extinction. And I had to go to Washington, D.C. and tell a bunch of administrators that, you know, I'm supposed to be recovering the grizzly bears, but we're probably going to lose the grizzly bear because nobody's cooperating, number one, and there's so few of them left. And these guys were not necessarily, you know, wildlife conservators. You know, they weren't interested in grizzly bears. What they were interested in is making sure that grizzly bears, which were really visible at that time because of the work of the Craigheads, they didn't want grizzly bears to disappear from Yellowstone on their watch. And so what we got is we got a three-page memorandum signed by the two assistant secretaries that run the Forest Service, the Park Service, the BLM. And they got the four governors of the states to sign this too. And this memorandum basically said, we're going to cooperate to implement the grizzly bear recovery plan.
They all did it. This is, yeah, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, and Washington.
Right. And with that cooperation to implement the plan, we began to see everybody pulling in the same direction. And slowly but surely, the numbers increased. And as the numbers increased, things got better. And today we have 1,000 grizzly bears in the Yellowstone ecosystem.
And up until recent times, it seems like people have been pretty pro-bear in the bigger picture, right? Like, this has been a good thing.
I think the average person is very supportive of grizzly bears. You know, I think, you know, the general public, especially people that don't live in grizzly bear habitat, they love grizzly bears.
Yeah.
People that live in grizzly habitat, you know, by and large, people like having them around. They think it's pretty cool that they're here. And I always promote the idea that we should be proud to be a place that has grizzly bears rather than be, oh, they're really oppressive, you know, and they're cost us all this money and they're really bad for us. And they're really dangerous and all this kind of thing. I mean, they're really something that drives the uniqueness of the places where they are. And that's a neat thing to have. Montana has more grizzly bears than any other state outside of Alaska, and it should be proud of that. Rather than, you know, trying to say, well, you know, our solution is to take over management and we'll fix those grizzly bears. We'll just drive their numbers down and restrict their range as soon as we get control. And, you know, that's not the general feeling of the public at all. I think the general feeling is that most people really like bears. And they like having them around. When there's conflicts, you know, they want those conflicts solved. The agencies don't want the conflicts either. And so we join them in efforts to try to minimize conflicts and help people live successfully with bears.
What happens when there's a fatality? Like recently, someone was killed in West Yellowstone by a grizzly. Or do people use that for leverage? Or does that do anything in this, in the bigger picture?
Irresponsible politicians use it for leverage, yeah. And they try to make something out of a tragedy like that. I think the average person realizes, you know, that that's really unfortunate and that's sad. And, you know, why did it happen? They want to know why it happens. And, you know, amazingly enough, well, it's not amazing, it's sad, but you know, we have guidelines on how people should behave when they're in bear habitat to minimize conflicts. You know, make noise, be aware of bears, carry bear spray, don't run, don't yell, scream, you know, all these things that we tell people how to do it. And particularly, don't hike alone. And we tell people these things, and the majority of people that are killed by grizzly bears, we find, are not doing what we tell them to do. You know, it's mostly things that can be avoided. And, you know, with bear safety training and with awareness of your surroundings and with the knowledge of, you know, I'm in bear habitat, I got to pay attention, I got to go with a friend, I've got to carry bear spray, all these things, you can be quite safe in grizzly bear habitat if you do the right thing. So.
And the numbers are pretty small anyway.
No, there's actually very few. And there's not very many people that are killed by grizzly bears. It's a very small number. Last 30, 40 years, it's less than 20. If you look at it, there's in the lower 48 states right now, there's about 2,500 grizzly bears. And in those areas, there are millions of people that recreate in that bear habitat. They hike, they fish, they hunt, they camp. They do all those things in grizzly bear habitat, and there's hardly any incidents with bears.
Not that many years ago, you were pro delisting them.
Yeah, I was the big proponent of delisting because the objective of the Endangered Species Act is to get listed species to the point at which protection under the Endangered Species Act is no longer required. That's the purpose of the job. So, you know, listing grizzly bears under the ESA is not like creating a wilderness area that should always be wilderness. Listed species are supposed to get delisted. You're supposed to fix the problems. And we were well on the way to doing that. And, you know, I was confident working with the professionals at the state level, who are really good people, the wildlife professionals in the state agencies, that they knew how to do the right things and that they would be good stewards of bears and bear habitat. And in the future of bears was good. And I was a proponent of delisting, and I wrote the first delisting rule for Yellowstone and defended it in court. What happened over time is that in recent time, in the past 2 to 3 years or so, we've seen politicians get involved and start manipulating what the state professionals do, telling them what they can do, what they should say, and putting in place policies which are really anti-predator policies, not based on biology, not based on need, not based on facts, but based on you know, barroom biology and fear of predators. And these people, these politicians, are now in control. And the wildlife professionals at the state level have been relegated to be quiet and not talk about it. And so that's what we have now. And I'm opposed to giving politicians control of grizzly bear management.
How did this start? And this isn't just Montana, right? This is Wyoming. This is Idaho.
Yeah.
But how did it start and why? Like, and why the animals? You know, why the bears? Why the wolves?
I think the thing revolves around the control of nature. You know, I mean, you get way back to that. Some people are really uncomfortable around nature existing as it should. And they feel that we need to fix things. We people need to fix things. For example, a lot of the excuse is used, well, you know, the wolves are eating all the elk. And if we just kill the wolves or kill most of the wolves, that there'd be a lot more elk and elk would be everywhere and every elk hunter would get an elk and everybody would live happily ever after. There's another excuse is that, you know, the wolves and the bears are eating all the livestock and driving the livestock industry out of business. And that's just nonsense. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And there's no basis for that. But these people, you know, they base their opinions on fear and on emotion. They don't base their opinions on science and facts. And so they convince people that, yeah, the bears, you know, and the wolves are eating all the elk, and we got to kill the bears and the wolves to save the elk, save the deer even, as if we don't have enough deer, and to save the livestock industry. And none of those things are factually correct. And yet they're able, because they control the state legislatures, and we have Republican governors in the four states now, the three states, not Washington. They implement policies that are based on nonsense and irrational fear of predators. And the result is this real, you know, we're going to have to, you know, start snaring wolves with neck snares, and we're going to pay people to kill wolves or bounties. You know, all these crazy laws that they're putting in place, they're really harmful, not only to animals, but to the whole balance of between people and nature and the way we look at nature. It's crazy.
Most people don't want wolves being snared, and they don't want grizzlies being killed and mothers with their cubs and all the things that are being talked about right now. And now you can legally go shoot a mother wolf and all of her pups in the den and do like all sorts of terrible things. But the majority of people do not want to see this happening. And right. So, but it's a really small group of really loudmouth voices that have taken over.
That's right. And they dominate the thoughts of these legislators, and they've captured the governors and gotten the governors to say crazy things like, you know, grizzly bears are costing us so much money, you know, they're driving us into the poverty house because we have grizzly bears. And, you know, grizzly bears bring tens of millions of dollars of tourism dollars to these states, because people come here to see grizzly bears. They come here to be in a place where grizzly bears still live. They don't come here because there's a lot of cows.
I was thinking this morning, I was in Yellowstone like last spring, and it was a really cold, it was like 10 degrees. So there was hardly anybody there except wolf watchers and a few other people. It was amazing. But I was thinking this morning, who would fly all the way to Montana, like who lived in New York, like me, to just go to Yellowstone? I mean, it's beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places on earth. But if there were no animals, right? If there's no grizzlies and there's no wolves, no mountain lions, no, people wouldn't. You know, they would go somewhere else. I mean, that's why you go there, to see all these like majestic animals that we have in this country. And that doesn't seem like it's part of the equation with these politicians, and thinking like, oh, if we kill all these guys, that's the money.
Yeah. I mean, I used to think, I've changed now, but I used to think that you could convince people with facts and information, and that if people were knowledgeable about the real state of affairs, they would make good decisions. But many of these people, they are not interested in the facts at all. They're interested in just promoting a view of things that is not based on reality at all. And when you present them with the facts that, you know, the wolves are not eating all the elk, then they just ignore it. They completely ignore that. And they go ahead and do whatever they were going to do in the first place. And so we're dealing with a situation in which people in control have departed from reality. They are no longer basing what they do on facts and information. They're basing what they do based on information and political gain, how they can manipulate others to think like they think. And that's a real sad state of affairs, because if you're dealing with people that don't really rely on information and facts, then you're stuck. You can't really argue with them with information. You can't go in there and say, you know, it's emotionally crazy what you guys are doing. I mean, they're just resilient to any kind of statement of fact about what's happening. And I've testified before the legislatures, you know, and it's like talking to a brick wall, you know, and there's nothing that happens.
How does anything change?
I think that things will only change with elections and getting those people out of office. I mean, we have politicians across the United States in office or seeking office who are completely independent of the facts and reality, and they get elected. And I don't understand that. So right. It's a mystery to me.
In the meanwhile, though, for a situation like the grizzly bears, first of all, how do you keep them on the endangered species list, and how do you keep them safe?
My position is that, you know, grizzly bears can be managed by the states if the states use science and facts to make decisions.
They're not doing that with the wolves, though.
And at this point, they're not doing that with wolves. And I think if they were given control of grizzly bears, they would do the same thing to grizzly bears that they're doing to wolves. And so I do not think that they are responsible enough to manage grizzly bears at this point. I think it's important to realize that there's two groups of people here. The politicians are the problem, you know, infusing all the decisions with emotion and nonsense, whereas the state wildlife professionals are really good people, and they want to make decisions based on facts. And they worked for years with me in the recovery program to get where we are today. I mean, they were instrumental in the process. There's really good people, wildlife management professionals at the state level. And if they were in charge of grizzly bear and wolf management, we wouldn't be seeing this crazy things we're seeing right now. So the politicians right now have usurped the management of wildlife, and they are infusing this management with real dangerous activities that are dangerous to animals and that are not supported by the majority of the public, but are supported by the majority of their electors. So if you're talking about a legislature, it comes from a really small rural area, and then everybody in that rural area may have a sense of grizzly bears or wolves that's completely different than the vast majority of the state. But if those people are in charge of a committee and leading things, and then you get the particular party involved that has total control of the legislature, then they all vote as blocks. You know, it's unfortunate.
Back in the 80s, when you listed the five things that you did to turn this around, and one of them was change public opinion. Is that something that can be done now, or is it just too far gone?
I think that the majority of the public doesn't support this kind of stuff, but
right.
In some cases, the majority of the electors of some of these legislators do. Now, can we get information to the public to allow them to make decisions based on facts? You know, like this guy supports this, whereas that's not really true. That's my hope. I hope that we can be a voice of reason, and that we can speak out about what's needed. You know, I write op-eds, I go testify before committees, and you know, I try to make my voice heard, and there are many of us that try to do that to make sure that the public realizes that what's being proposed and what's being done is not really supported by the scientists and the managers who are responsible for these animals. And the vast majority of scientists and managers do not support this at all.
Up until recent times, all of this was in the hands of the scientists and the managers. And so it made sense that that's who was in charge. That's probably one thing that needs to change, right? To take it back.
Yeah, I mean, that would be really good. That would be a real advance. I mean, remember when we started and I told you the story of how I went back to Washington and got people thinking about writing a memorandum of agreement, and then we got the four governors to sign it? The four governors of the state signed a document to recover the grizzly bear. Do you think we'd get those four governors to sign a document like that today?
No.
So what has happened that we have gotten to this crazy situation? It's just like, you know, common sense and making decisions based on information seems to have gone out the window. And I hope we can get that back again.
Are you hopeful that we can?
If I wasn't hopeful, I would be, you know, really in despair and depression. So I am hopeful. And I think it's really important to be a voice for change and to be a real positive voice out there. And I speak out every chance I get to tell the rest of the story. And I think the majority of the people I talk to are really, they're accepting of that. And there are many of us who want to keep doing that because, you know, I'm not willing to give up and allow the grizzly bears to be, and the wolves to be destroyed again after we got them so far and brought them out of almost oblivion to where they are today. So,
is there anything people can do other than vote differently that can help this situation?
Speak up, write letters to the editor, you know, comment when somebody somebody does write, you know, speak up and say, you know, I don't support this. Letters to the editor, columns, things like that, I think really make a difference. As long as, you know, you see continuous numbers of them, people speaking out, and you're not speaking out, you know, I want to protect all the bears. No one should ever kill a bear. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about making decisions on science and facts and understanding that we live in nature. And in order to live here successfully, we need to be stewards of the place we live in. You know, we can't dominate life. And if we wanted to, you know, we've eliminated grizzly bears from 96% of their former range in Western United States. They live in about 4% of their range right now. And in those areas are really special because grizzly bears live here. Grizzly bears are pretty special animals. They're tolerant to some degree of people, but not tolerant to some other degree. And if we want grizzly bears to be around, we have to behave in a special way in those places. And we need to look at those places as really valuable, special places. It is really neat to have grizzly bears around. It's a positive thing, not a, now there's grizzly bears here. Now there's grizzly bears there, which I hear from some people sometimes. I mean, they're gone from most of the places they live because we killed them all. And the few places that are left, it's important to understand that we need to be stewards of them and the places they need in order to continue them on the landscape. And we can do it. We can live with grizzly bears successfully. And maybe we have to make a couple sacrifices, but big deal. You know, we've done a lot to them. I think we can come a little ways and give them a little space and a little bit of room. And that's what I advocate for.
Thank you so much for talking to me today. And thank you for all of the work you do for these animals. I hope things turn around politically sometime in the near future.
Even a little bit would be good, you know.
To learn more about Chris and to learn more about the fate of grizzly bears, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, Olivia Deming, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.